Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, we have a lot on tap today because we have a lot on tap this weekend. This is a weekend that we are getting together with the members of the Itty Bitty Fan Club because we have a meeting, we have a get together, we have some time to talk about Black history, we're going to write poetry. Well, let me tell you what I did in preparation for tomorrow. I had a chance to sit down with Josh Evans, who is 11 years old in sixth grade. He wrote his own book. Itty Bitty members, I'm talking to you. This interview with Josh Evans is for you. Listen up. Joshua Evans is an 11-year-old sixth grader who attends Towson Concordia Preparatory School. He recently published his first book entitled The Cool Sons Family, The Family of Peace. He will be doing a virtual book launch on February 20th from 5 to 7 p.m. You just completed your first book, Joshua. What was the process like for you?
It was a big process. So what inspired me to write this whole entire thing was, so my story was when I was 2 years old, the doctor told me that I had a developmental delay. They told my mom that I had a developmental delay. Developmental delay is when you start doing things like running, talking, and doing other stuff at a very late age, but my mom, my dad, my whole entire family prayed for me. And all of a sudden, I started walking and talking. What also inspired me was my mom, because she was also the one who wrote her very first book at the age of 41 called Finding Normal.
I love that. So your mom inspired you, your family prayed for you. How did you find time to write a book and complete your studies?
So I actually did, most of the time I did this was during the pandemic, 2020, I think.
So while everybody was stocking up on toilet paper and products, you were writing a book.
Yes, ma'am.
That's wonderful. Can you give us a preview of the book? What is it about?
Well, I'm going to read the back of it now. Okay. So the Cousins kids are not your typical family. They are a sibling group of a variety of ages. They are creative, courageous, innovative, mischievous, but very loving, all at the same time. This book of their experience takes you on a journey through the life of a large family that laughs, cries, prays, and fellowships together. Be sure to stay tuned, as this is just the beginning of their adventures together.
Oh, I love that. Now, I hear you love the piano. When did you begin playing the piano? What are some of your favorite songs?
I started playing the piano since 4 years old when I was a little kid. It helped me with retention and discipline. And some of my favorite songs, well, I played one song one time on Christmas called Silent Night.
Oh, I love that.
Me too. What else? I can't really think of none right now, except that.
Well, let me ask you this before we go. What are your plans for when you get older? So you play the piano, you're in the sixth grade, you have completed your first book, which might just be the beginning of a series. What's next for you?
Well, I am going to be working on becoming a gamer, you know, getting into video games more. I'm working on a 3-book series for the Cousins kids, so this isn't the end. And I'm going to work on 2 more series after that.
Very busy. Well, Joshua Evans, we look forward to seeing you tomorrow at the Itty Bitty Fan Club. Folks, you have to join us. Send an email to todaywithdrk@gmail.com. Get the Zoom link and join me and Joshua Evans, our guest author, tomorrow as we talk about writing and poetry and finding ourselves on the page. Thank you so much, Joshua.
You're welcome. It's been nice being here with you.
It's been a pleasure. So, folks, that was Joshua Evans. He's going to be with us tomorrow for the Itty Bitty Fan Club. So, Itty Bitty Fan Club members, you only have from today until tomorrow morning, about 9:30 a.m., because that'll be it, when your adult person can send me an email to todaywithdrk@gmail.com. I can send them the link, and you can join me tomorrow from 10 a.m. till about 11:30, 12 o'clock p.m., and we're going to write poetry. We're going to sing songs. We're going to talk about Black History Month. We're going to actually do what Amanda Gorman did. We're going to see ourselves on the page and write our words out on the page and do that together. The Itty Bitty Fan Club meets tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. So let's get our show started. Look, millions of people have been impacted by two winter storms that hit the state of Texas. They are feeling it everywhere, from Tennessee, where my son is dealing with 16 to 18 inches of snow. And Tennessee, by the way, only gets an inch per year, so they're dealing with about 16 years of snow at one time. They're dealing with it in Colorado. They're dealing with it all around the country. We've been dealing with ice here this week, but something's happening in Texas. Texas is on a whole nother level of having to deal with this storm. And part of it is because the politicians in Texas chose to not put in regulations around the electricity. So the lines have been gripped. People are without power and have been for a few days. No electricity, no water, no food, no heat, no shelter. 58 people have died thus far due to hypothermia, carbon monoxide poisoning, car accidents, drownings, and house fires. I've been following this on Twitter. There was one woman who tweeted out there was a house on fire on her block. She called 911 and she said that they said help is not on the way. You're going to have to deal with it. Now, you may think this is one incident and we don't talk about rumors here. Folks, this has been reported on the news across the board. They can't get out to help people. It's just what it is right now. Can you imagine? One woman took a picture. She set a bottle of oil, olive oil, next to her ivory liquid, put them up on the counter, took a picture first thing in the morning. She came back a couple hours later. The oil was frozen, the liquid detergent frozen. That's how cold her house is. She wanted to show us how cold her house is. She's sleeping up underneath tons of blankets. She said it is an absolute mess. Someone said, well, why don't you just leave? Go to a hotel. There are no hotels available. You actually can't even drive on the roads. The roads are not open at this moment. So I have someone who's going to join us very shortly, Dr. Alicia Moore. She'll be coming on in just a little while. And I have her standing by. But I want to talk about what's happening in Texas, because all of these climate issues, all the things that are happening as a result of the politicians. Ted Cruz has just gotten back from Cancun. I mean, how horrible do you have to be to watch the residents who voted for you deal with no heat, no water, no electricity, and you catch a plane and head off to Cancun so your family can be comfortable. Y'all, we got to talk about how we can turn Texas blue. Like, that should be the next goal here. I reached out to Dr. Alicia Moore, a very good friend of mine, who's an associate professor of education at Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Dr. Moore, how are you?
I'm doing great today, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm doing well. I really appreciate you joining us. So first, let me ask you about your own personal situation. I know you've been without electricity. You had a neighbor without water. Can you talk us through what's happening in Georgetown, Texas?
Well, I can talk about what's happening in Georgetown, but also I commute to Georgetown, so I am in Austin, Texas.
Oh.
And it has been horrific. Definitely. So some of the things that you talked about were basically on the money. But personally, I've had no power. I went through having no water. I went through having, of course, if there's no power, there's no electricity. The only thing gas in our house is the gas stove. And so we had to sleep in the living room, which is closest to the kitchen, so that we could stay warm.
So with that in mind, closest to the kitchen where we can stay warm. There are a lot of people who don't even have the basics here. We're hearing about water pipes bursting, water in homes. Can you talk a little bit about that? And people who can't afford to go anywhere at this moment.
Well, one of the things that was a big, big, I won't say surprise, but it was one of those things that kind of slapped you in the face, something that we don't think about. Because homes here in Austin aren't insulated for this kind of weather. And so it was a shock to some people, including myself. Since I've grown up here, I've never seen this kind of weather or this kind of impact. But yes, there are people in many neighborhoods, elderly people, especially in areas of town which are low income, and they can't pick up and go to a hotel. And even if they could, there were no hotels within 50 miles of here. All of the hotels were booked if you had the means to actually go to a hotel. But there were people who were living in their homes with no heat, who had every blanket available and every pillow. They were sleeping either in the kitchen next to their gas stove, or if they had a fireplace, they were sleeping next to the fireplace. And so there were many, especially the elderly, who did not have the means to stay warm. They did not have anybody because the roads were awful. So there weren't people traveling to go say, oh, I'm going to go pick up this person or my mom's over here. We couldn't get to some of those people. And so it was really a state of emergency.
Can you talk a little bit about something that we don't understand? Here in Baltimore, I mean, we complain about our gas and electric, but it's pretty regulated, right? So I know I'm not going to get a bill for like $17,000 for just a couple of days, but there's talk that people are getting bills of $3,000, $17,000 of just the last couple of days. Can you talk about that?
Actually, I had not heard about the actual bill, but what I do know is that there were people who did have electricity, who some of them were actually sharing that electricity. So one of my neighbors actually, on one of the last nights that it was really cold, had an electrical cord, and it was one of those janitorial cords that he ran from his house to our house so that we'd have some power. I don't know what that means for him, the impact that will mean for him, but of course we will help him out. But I wonder about others because people were taking people in off the street. If there were people who could actually get to other family, they did. And so you had all of these other people in the house drawing this electricity, using different methods of trying to keep warm. So I had not heard about specific dollar amounts, but I know that that might be coming.
So now let me ask you. There are three energy grids in the United States, East, West, and in Texas. How did the Texas infrastructure fall to a brink of collapse? Like, what exactly has happened because Texas is on their own independent power grid?
You know, it's funny to say, and I don't mean funny, ha-ha. I mean funny as in strange, as in different, as in deviant. You know, one of the things that we think in Texas, and I'll add myself into that pile of that, or that group. One of the things that we're taught in Texas is that we are, I guess, a country unto ourselves. And so it doesn't surprise me that we have our own grid. However, the thing that does surprise me is the stupidity behind making a decision like that. I mean, there were times, we know, hundreds of years ago when it was about Texas secede from the Union, secede from the rest of the nation. And I think that's basically what has happened. In some ways, power didn't leave us. We left power.
Oh, that's a good point. Let me ask you, what did you think, Dr. Moore? And this did not surprise me so much as annoy me, of the pictures of Senator Ted Cruz. First of all, going to the airport, getting on a flight, going to Cancun in the midst of what's happening in Texas and a global pandemic. And this sense that the politicians are jumping ship. There was, you know, one of the mayors had tweeted out and said, look, you know, it's every man or woman, I guess, for themselves. It's the strong that will survive. And so you need to find a way to make it work. You need to find a way to take care of yourself. This is from Tim Boyd here. He said, I'm going to hurt some feelings, but, I mean, this mayor, by the way, end up resigning. But he's like, I don't care. We have to take care of ourselves. What is it about that attitude that no matter what happens, you should be strong enough to just deal with it, even if your politicians run off to Cancun because they're too cold?
Well, to me, that really lends itself to the three P's, and that's patriarchy, power, and privilege. Mm. And that's what we saw come to light with Ted Cruz actually being filmed going through the airport with his mask on, at least, but going through the airport to take his kids to Cancun while his constituents froze to death. And one of the things I thought about is that he was going to Cancun while the rest of us were here trying not to chip our teeth from shivering, and he's headed to Cancun. The mayor that tweeted that out, when I heard about that, I was livid. Because that's back to that pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Right.
And I wish that someone could have put him in his underwear and stood him in the middle of one of our major thoroughfares and then told him, go ahead, fend for yourself.
Right.
Because this was no joke. This was of epic proportions, at least for us in Texas. And I really don't, as a Texan, think that we are, the things that we go through are for the faint of heart. I think that we're strong and we muddle our way through whatever challenges we have. But this was different. This felt different and not just cold. It felt there was an innate difference in which there were some ways that you felt alone, you felt trapped, and you could not believe. This was when people were talking about shelter in place for COVID. This was shelter in place on steroids. Wow. And some have even compared it to a Katrina-like instance in which you have millions of people who are disenfranchised by the point that or the fact that we had no infrastructure to be able to take care of us in a moment like this. And so there was finger pointing and everything else. But this has been truly an eye-opener.
So then from this point, Dr. Moore, how do we go forward from here? I mean, I'm specifically thinking about Texas as the Lone Star State. We're on our own. We can do it ourselves. Take care of yourself. Every man, woman, person for themselves. Only the strong will survive. I mean, the number of people that have died, the way that Texas looks like, it has just collapsed in and on itself. How do you go forward from here? And I'm talking about people who started with less at the table and now with this storm find themselves even farther behind.
I think in some ways this storm was the great equalizer for many. And when I say equalizer, I definitely don't mean that everybody's on the same step, so to speak. But I think it made people think differently. It's one thing to call yourself the Lone Star State, but it's another thing when you're out there alone, feeling as though you're alone. So we have our own power grid, and this power grid failed. And rather than worrying about the people, you have politicians and you have, you know, agencies pointing the finger. And so what do we do from here? One of the things we need to realize is that we all need each other. Mm. And that means something different from just being a Texan. That means something bigger than that. It means something different than being a Republican and a Democrat. It means something about humanity and about civility. And so it's bigger than that. It's bigger than us just being the Lone Star State. Where do we go from here? We go to looking at the fact that humanity should come before all of the other things, because all of the other things, in the light of what happened, are small things.
Mm, thank you so much, Dr. Alicia Moore. I think that we're going to watch this situation. Please keep us in the loop. She has 22 years of higher ed experience. She currently teaches undergraduate courses in early childhood, special ed, and general education, supervises field-based and student teachers in Georgetown and the surrounding areas. Associate Professor of Education, we thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. I wish you all the best, and thank you for having an infrastructure that's stronger than ours. Send us some power. Thank you.
Absolutely. So, folks, a boy fell through the ice. A woman lost her power. 47 to 48 deaths tied to the winter storms and counting. The Texas power grid failure that left millions without power during the February 15th, this week here, during the week of February 15th, prompted calls for a system more resilient to extreme weather. I want to put that on the table for us to talk about. Like, what's going on with Texas? I also want to ask you, you know, in our kind of weekly wrap here, Joe Biden, and maybe I cannot be the only one that remembers that Joe Biden campaigned on getting rid of canceling student debt. Anybody? I mean, maybe I was dreaming, but I remember that a big issue for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris was that they were going to get rid of student debt. Y'all, I was all in. Why? Because black folks carry more student debt than any other race or ethnicity in this country. So I was thinking of all my brothers and sisters who are like, I have $200,000 and $70,000 and whatever, the cost of a house in student loans. My heart went out to them, and I'm like, yes, cancel it all. Give people a chance to build their net worth. I have friends, family members who cannot buy a house because they are stretched with paying student loans. That's one group. They're trying to pay them off. There's another group of people like, you know what? Student loans are like, you know, getting a bad disease. It's going to be with you forever. So I'm not going to pay it off because it's going to be with me forever. That's another group. Like, I'll just default. I'll do whatever I can. I just can't pay it because when I die, I've heard people say this, when I die, my student loan debt dies with me. Student loans. It's not like when you have a house, you die, your family gets it, and the money's still there. My student loan debt does not get transferred to Kofi. Just using that for example. So you have that camp of people like, you know, there's nothing I can do. Then there's another camp that says, look, we need to find a way to give people a clean slate. Let's talk about that and Texas when we return. Dr. K, I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Student loan debt, cancel it, yay or nay? Should Joe Biden cancel student loan debt? Now, when you cancel student loan debt, you're canceling it primarily for African-American and Hispanics who took out loans, student loans, to go to college. But then, no matter how many jobs you work or how long you work, with all of the interest accumulating for a number of people, that is a hurdle to get over. For people who are like, I can get my student loan debt forgiven, you're talking about being able to buy a house, being able to save for graduation, being able to put money aside for your own child to go to college. Student loan debt in this country is no joke. And when Joe Biden was campaigning, I remember, I cannot be the only one that remembers when Joe Biden said, I'm going to cancel student loan debt. He has now come out and said, look, I'm not doing that. I can give you like $10,000, and then you got to do some volunteer work or something to work for the rest of it. And he's like, well, I'll do 50 grand is what they're saying now, when the idea was that it was all going to be canceled clean slate. We have a clip of Joe Biden speaking at the CNN town hall, President Biden being asked a question about student loan debt. Let's take a listen to it.
Student loans are crushing my family, friends, and fellow Americans.
Me too.
The American dream is to succeed, but how can we fulfill that dream when debt is many people's only option for a degree? We need student loan forgiveness beyond the potential $10,000 your administration has proposed. We need at least a $50,000 minimum. What will you do to make that happen?
I will not make that happen. It depends on whether or not you go to a private university or a public university. It depends on the idea that I say to a community, I'm going to forgive the debt, the billions of dollars of debt for people who have gone to Harvard and Yale and Penn and schools, my children. I went to a great school. I went to a state school. But is that going to be forgiven rather than use that money to provide for early education for young children who come from disadvantaged circumstances? But here's what I think. I think everyone, and I've been proposing this for 4 years, everyone should be able to go to community college for free. For free. That's cost $9 billion, and we should pay for it. And the tax policies we have now, we should be able to pay for it. You spend almost that money as a break for people who own racehorses. And I think any family making under $125,000 whose kids go to a state university they get into, that should be free. As well.
So Joe Biden is saying, look, no matter what you say, no matter how much you ask, y'all gonna pay those student loans. That's what he's saying. Like, y'all gonna pay them. Y'all not gonna use me to get up from under the debt so you can begin to accumulate wealth and build your net worth. No, I'm not doing it. I'm not bailing black folks out. It's interesting because Joe Biden becoming president was punching above his weight class, right? Now, I'm not a boxing fan, but my daddy is. My daddy's a huge fan of Muhammad Ali. He's a friend of Muhammad Ali, or was a friend before Brother Ali, you know, ran on ahead to see how the end is going to be. So my dad used to talk about fighting above your weight class and what that meant. So whenever there was a thing going on, he would talk about, you know, whether you were punching above your weight class, fighting someone who was bigger than you, stronger than you, that had more than you, fighting against racism, that, you know, you're not well prepared. You're fighting above your weight class. President Joe Biden, in becoming president, was punching above his weight class, right? Because he has run for president a number of times unsuccessfully in the history of this country. In fact, prior to getting to South Carolina, current President Joe Biden, then Senator Joe Biden, wasn't even in the lead. Like, he was being beat by just about everybody. I mean, you can name the people and run it down, from Amy Klobuchar to Pete Buttigieg. I mean, he was not doing well in the polls. And it was almost as if Congressman Jim Clyburn said, no worries, get to South Carolina, I got you. He was losing primaries state by state. It was like, no, South Carolina is coming. Let me hold on to South Carolina, because the black folks in South Carolina, they're going to do this for me. And you know what, folks? They did. Joe Biden rolled on into South Carolina. Jim Clyburn worked his magic. Black club women did their thing. The churches did their thing. And Joe Biden rode South Carolina all the way to the White House, right? The road to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue went through Jim Clyburn and my home in South Carolina. As a result of that, Joe Biden made a promise when he was up on that stage. He said, you know, if I make it to the next level, I'm going to put a woman on the ticket with me. Black women immediately got to work and said, look, as much as black folks have done and are doing for you, you need to have a black woman as your number two. And he did. He selected Kamala Harris, who in many ways was the least controversial person to choose. Least controversial. Everyone else, be a lot of questions. Kamala Harris was who he selected. Okay, we got to work. Strolling to the polls, wearing our pearls and chucks, like doing everything we can to make sure. Stacey Abrams was down turning Georgia blue. Folks were working hard to make sure that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris made it into the White House. And now that they're there, now that the punching above your weight class has paid off for you, there are a number of black people who are saying, okay, so what does it mean that the main thing, because you're not going to give us reparations. Y'all understand Joe Biden is not going to give you reparations. That's not happening. So you're not going to give us reparations. Then provide student loan debt. There was one time when he actually said, if you attended an HBCU, he was going to do student loan debt. Then people said, well, I didn't go to an HBCU. I went to Harvard or Princeton or some private school. He's like, okay, well, I'm not going to do private institutions. I'm going to look at public institutions and HBCUs, and it moved from total cancellation and total forgiveness. It went down to 50 grand, and now it's at 10. That's it, $10,000, y'all. That's it. And then you need to find a way to volunteer, become a teacher, do whatever you can if you want to make the rest of it work. It's interesting because there's something that feels a little disturbing about this. What do you think? Student loan debt Should it be forgiven, yay or nay? I have a call on the line. Hashakahani Bilal, how are you? Give us a call back. 410-319-8888. Should Joe Biden be persuaded to do full forgiveness for student loan debt? 410-319-8888. So we can get this thing and work it out. Because that is an issue that I think is very interesting. And I'm not sure how that's going to play out. I know that he is not moving on this issue. I know that he is not really feeling that this is something that he wants to do, but it's something that we need to do. 410-319-8888. Should Joe Biden be pressured to forgive student loan debt? Given what is happening in this country, given the fact that what we're really fighting for is reparations, and what it looks like we're not going to get is reparations. I know that there's some people like, we're going to get reparations, we're going to get reparations. I don't think so. I don't think reparations are a viable option at this time, even though I am someone who is in support of it. I want my reparations. Cut me my check. Run me my change of $800,000. It's mine. I work for it. My family's worked for it. Run us out. In fact, give us the $800,000 and we'll take care of the student loan. Like, you can't take both of them away from us. No reparations and no student loan debt forgiveness. Like, you could do something here. And student loan debt, they said that Joe Biden has the ability to do this with the swipe of a pen. Like, this is not heavy lifting for Joe Biden to simply write it right on off. And he said no. Folks got to work harder. Folks got to work smarter. Folks got to figure it out, and they haven't been able to figure it out at all. So Biden has rejected the $50,000 student loan forgiveness plan. The president has the legal authority, and this is from Elizabeth Warren's Twitter page. The president has the legal authority to cancel $50,000 of student loan debt, which will help close the racial wealth gap and benefit the 40% of borrowers who don't have a college degree. She's calling on him to do it. Chuck Schumer's calling on him to do it. Biden has rejected that. Biden, who was fighting above his weight class. Biden, who wish black folks showed up strong for him. He's saying, no, I will not make that happen. I'm not doing it. He says, there's certain people who shouldn't have their loan debt forgiven. If you went to Harvard or Yale, if you make a high salary, nope, not doing that. What we can do is we'll make community college free, and then you can talk about the next generation. 410-319-8888. Jacqueline's on the phone from Baltimore. Jacqueline, how are you?
Hi, Dr.
J. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Yes, I think that we should really just pressure him, because he made that promise to us. I mean, I was looking forward to it, and I know other people. I mean, we have all this debt. We weren't given the job that we were promised we get if we get these certain degrees. Americans, they always found something wrong, like you're overqualified, or you didn't take this class, or you don't have enough work experience. So you end up with all this debt because you're getting these low-paying jobs, or you're getting paid less than your white counterparts or your other counterparts. And I know this because I was working in administration at a hospital, and I did the budget, and I brought it up, and maybe like a couple of months later, they were laying me off, okay? And that was in the 90s. And so I ended up with all this student debt. And to hear Joe Biden say that, I was so happy. I was like, finally, you know, I'm in age now, and I can't, I mean, the government is going to end up with this big loan that I have, because I cannot. There's no way I can pay it.
Right.
There's absolutely no way I can pay it.
All right.
Because he promised that to us, we look forward to him keeping his promise.
Yeah,
I am upset with the fact that he just boldly says it, like he doesn't even care.
Yep. He said, nope, I'm not going to do it. He went on to say, I don't have the power to do it. Turns out he does have the power to do it. Not all of it, but he has the power to do 50 grand. That's what he has the power to do. And he's saying point blank, I ain't going to do that. Even though the people that are asking for are the people who helped put him in office.
Right, right. We are the ones that helped put him in office. He said that when he was elected. I remember African Americans that you are the one who ones who put us in office. And then he turns and is just so, oh my God, I'm just so upset with him.
Okay, well, thank
but
you
yes,
so much, Jacqueline.
I think we should pressure him. I don't think we should back down.
Okay, thank you so much. Pressure him, folks. Charles from Baltimore, then we have Hattie, and then we have Leroy.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Well, my impression is that I understand that when he first came, he was talking during his way to the White House, he had said $25 or $25,000.
Right.
I didn't hear that he was going to forgive the whole thing. Well, in thinking about it, whatever he gives, I think is good. Should he give $10,000? Should he give $20,000? Even though you say he can give $60,000. I think if he goes anywhere between 25 and 30, should be sufficient. Now, also, I graduated back in 1983, and I graduated from Morgan. The tuition wasn't that much. After 4 years at Morgan, I had to pay back about maybe $9,000. And that didn't take a long time to pay back. But I do understand today, because I have a son who just got out of law school, and he owes over $125,000 in loan. And he's been paying that now for almost 8 years. So it does take time to have that done. And if we can get a reprieve by receiving $50,000, $70,000, whatever they want to give, even if it's $10,000 or $20,000, I'm appreciative of that.
All right. I appreciate you. Thank you so much, sir. We have Hattie on the phone from Baltimore. Hattie, how are you?
How are you, Dr. K?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
Great. I think we should apply pressure on President Biden. And I also think we need to file a lawsuit for reparations.
Okay. I appreciate you, and I agree with you. I agree with you. Leroy from Baltimore. Then we'll go to Ms. Thorpe.
Hey, Dr. K.
Hey. How are you?
Hello?
Hello, I'm still here.
Hello?
Hello? Okay, let's go out of Leroy and let's go to Ms. Thorpe, a new call from Columbia. Ms. Thorpe, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm so much fine. And you, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Yes, I was just listening and, you know, about the student loan. And I'm really, really disappointed because a lot of people right now, they're working to make two ends meet and they can't because of student loans. You know, and that was promised to us, and we're looking for it. We went out there and we joined those long lines to vote. I took a day off from my job to vote, and the line was very long. You know, so I'm looking for that help.
I'm with you.
I was really disappointed when I heard, you know, President Biden. I thought he was going to do something about a student loan, you know, because $10,000 ain't nothing, you know. It's something, but it's not going. It's just like
no.
It's not going to take us nowhere.
No. Not when he has the authority. He can go up to $50,000. That's
right.
The thing. He actually
yeah.
has the authority to do that. So if you have the authority to go up to 50, then go up to 50. Why stop at 10?
At 10, right? A lot of us are struggling out here.
Yeah,
I know, and with all this pandemic, you know, this would help the economic also. You know what I'm saying?
Right. You're right. You're absolutely right. Thank you so much, Ms. Thorpe. We have Gary on the phone from Baltimore County. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Can you hear me?
I can.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
All right. Yo, Dr. K, you know, I listen to you just about every day.
Thank you.
And I have a daughter that's in that type of situation right now with the student loan debt. And she went to a private institution and everything. So, from what I'm hearing now, even if the loan is off the table altogether, wiping out the loan is off the table, and even if it was on the table, he was talking about only public schools,
right?
At one point, or is that what he was saying?
Yes, that's what he's talking about. He's talking about public schools or HBCUs.
Okay. My other thought with this is I don't agree with that either, and I agree with most of the callers who said, you know, there was a commitment made, just like you laid it out a couple of minutes ago with Biden, because he was all but done, you know, as far as a candidate for president. And, you know, I think we're getting to a point, you know, I turned 70 years old in December, and I, you know, over the decades, we've talked about it and we've discussed it. But I really think we need to look at our own party at this point and start leveraging votes that way. Because I think it's almost getting to a point where it doesn't matter which one of those parties' candidates that we choose. Obviously, the last 4 years was a challenge, and we know that. But we've had them before. Everybody was making pretend that we've never had somebody quite like Trump, and maybe not, but we've had some individuals that I remember in my lifetime. Was Reagan all that great for us?
No.
Was Daddy Bush? No. Was Daddy Bush all that great for us? Son Bush? I mean, you know, we've had a Clinton, you know. I mean, we've had situations where it seems like we support these individuals and nothing comes up and hardly anything comes of it. And I would love to see us at one point, and I'm going to throw something out there, and I know it might be a controversial thing, but just don't focus on the individual, but focus on what I'm going to say. A few years ago, maybe in the 90s, mm-hmm. Tavis Smiley had these meetings with several black people. We used to have these meetings where there was a plan laid out, an economic plan was laid out that black people would take before candidates and say, right, here's what we want. What happened with us doing that? Mm. I mean, on a level where it's, and that was before like internet and social media and all of the stuff that we got now.
Right.
Sort of.
No, I like that. Thank you so much. Putting forth, I got to stop you there. Gary, I got to stop you there, but I get what you're saying, Gary. This idea of putting forth a black plan saying this is what we want, which, by the way, folks, now I know I don't think I'm wrong on this. We have done consistently. We have put forth a black agenda. Joe Biden, I don't care what you say, he knows the black agenda. He has enough black folks sitting at that table with him. Not just Kamala Harris, Corinne Jean-Pierre, come on, Simone Sanders. I know girlfriend Stacey Abrams has the phone number into the White House office. Keisha Knight Bottoms, a lot of people. Muriel Bowser, right down the street. I'm saying, I think Joe Biden is well aware of the black agenda, but he's saying, ain't going to do it. Not going to make it happen for you. I'm going to go to Ishaka Ra, Hannibal L., and then I have Davon Bell, who's going to give us an update from Texas as well. How are you, Ishaka Ra, Hannibal L.?
Peace and blessings, doctor, and peace and blessings to the listening audience. My question on this, I don't want to get anybody angry, but if you cancel the debt or the student loan, then that would affect all those HBCUs that have children, I mean students, that's paying their loans. So where would the money come from that was supposed to go to the school? Wouldn't, you know, are they just going to reach up and grab that money and pay the schools? That's where I have a problem with. I don't, if the students got their loans canceled, that would be all right with me. But I'm just concerned with the economic impact that it's going to have on the institutions that they owe the money to.
But see, you understand, it would not impact the institution. Institutions have been paid. This is money that the government paid out. So the loan forgiveness would come from the government itself. It would not impact the institutions. And the government itself can support that kind of forgiveness. That's why $50,000 is the cap.
Okay. Well, yeah. You answered my question.
Thank you so much. All right. Davon Bell, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you, Dr. K?
I'm doing well. So I know you are based in Texas. I wanted to get another perspective. I spoke to Dr. Moore earlier talking about Georgetown, Texas. Where are you located, Davon?
I'm in Katy, Texas, which is around 25 miles outside of Houston.
Tell us what's happening there.
As of today, most people have gotten their power back. Mm-hmm. But there's still around less than 200,000, I think, that don't have power. Luckily, in my area, we had some power outages surrounding, like, my neighborhood. But luckily, you know, my household wasn't affected by the power outages, but the water, we still are on the boil order. So we have to boil all of our water because of the contamination and whatnot.
So the boiling of the water, so that they told you that even in your house, any water coming out of the sink has to be boiled before you drink it, before you use it, before anything?
Exactly, all of it. And it's crazy because, you know, stores are out of supplies, out of water, out of food and stuff. So if those that still don't have power and water, you know, they can't boil water and they can't get water, bottled water either. So, you know, they're just out of luck. So it's a really tough situation right now for a lot of people.
Now, let me ask you this, because one of the things that we're looking at is that things are kind of getting back up to normal. But I don't know what normal looks like if people are still boiling water. How long were people out of power? And I saw the pictures, too, of the water pipes bursting.
Right. Yeah. I had family members whose pipes burst, and also had friends who didn't have power for 30-plus hours, almost 3 days, 2 days, 3 days at a time. And then at certain points, you know, they would get power for maybe 5 minutes, 12 minutes, an hour, and then it would go back off. So they had to try and make a way, cover themselves with blankets, and, you know, make the best out of that situation and just wait in fear and uncertainty until, you know, the power somehow came back on.
Wow. So then my last question for you, in terms of the roads, have they been clean? Can people move around yet, or you're still not able to go anywhere?
As of now, at least in my area, the roads are clear for the most part. And you and Dr. Moore covered so much, but I think the biggest thing is that, you know, me being from Maryland, I'm used to this weather.
Right.
But everyone down here, they don't have the supplies to deal with this. They don't have salt trucks. They don't have shovels. They don't have things that they're built to deal deal with this. So, you know, it's just been really tough for a lot of people. But so far, the roads are better.
Will you be making your way outside of Texas, or are you able to make it through the weekend here?
I'm able to make it right now, so.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, we're definitely, our thoughts and prayers are with you, Davon. Keep us in the loop about what's happening in Texas. We are very concerned about the situation. Not a problem. Thank you so much, Davon, who is a former student of my husband from Arlington Baptist School. My husband's the principal. Johnny White is the principal of Arlington Baptist School. So thank you, Davon, for the connection. We have Leroy on the phone from Baltimore. Leroy, how are you?
Yes, hello, Dr. K.
I'm doing well, thank you.
Dr. K, applying for a job failed the psychological profile.
Okay. So you failed the psychological profile?
Uh-huh.
So what does that mean, Leroy?
Pardon me?
What does that mean that you failed the psychological profile?
It means I didn't get the job.
Okay, so does that tie into the student loan debt, sir?
Well, it didn't help, Dr. K. I was trying to work my way through school.
Okay. So then how can we assist you with this, Leroy?
Oh, I just want to let everybody know that, you know, for one reason or another, students, you know, they do try to pay off debt.
Okay. Thank you so much. Keep us in the loop, too, Leroy. I'm so sorry to hear that. I hope everything works out for you. Folks, I understand that people are dealing with a lot of issues. Someone has sent me a text message. Catherine said, I will have to respectfully disagree that Joe Biden campaigned on eliminating student debt. He campaigned on unity. Just eliminating student debt from some people is not going to fix the problem. Congress needs to repeal the law that they enacted that exempted student loans from bankruptcy protection. Also, the interest rate on student loans should not be more than 3%. Right now, some interest rates are in the double digits. I know personally about student loans because my husband and I have a combined of almost $100,000 because we both have been to graduate school. Sekou's on the phone from Baltimore. Sekou, how are you?
I'm good. And you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
Hey, look, it was coincidental that I just happened to be listening to public radio, and somebody, I think she was an African-American woman, she wrote a book about William Monroe Trotter and the contentious adversarial relationship between him and Booker T. Washington, and subsequently between Trotter and Woodrow Wilson. My point is, man, a lot of presidents that made promises to black folks that they reneged on didn't keep for one reason or another. we need to get away from this mentality that we can depend on and expect good from governments that we don't control, local, right, state, or federal. That's what we need to be focusing on. Stop going for the okey-doke and getting yourself in debt, work your way into the middle class, and then the economy has a recession, depression, it basically collapses, and you're right back where you started. Stop doing that. Learn from the past, because there's nothing new under the sun. Everything that's happening now has happened before. A lot of folks don't know it because they don't take the time to read independently of what they have to read to get those degrees.
All and that's right. why you come I'm out. I'll stop you there, Sekou. I appreciate you. So, folks, he mentioned William Monroe Trotter, was a newspaper editor, a real estate businessman based in Boston, Massachusetts. He actually contributed to the formation of the NAACP. Take a look at his work as an activist and an African-American civil rights opponent and advocate for that. And he founded the Boston Guardian, an independent African-American newspaper. I'm going to leave it here just for a second. When we come back on the other side of the break, I've got an interview with the first black man to lead up the CDC that you are not going to want to miss. First black man to be the U.S. Surgeon General. Dr. Satcher is dropping some wisdom on what it means to deal with COVID-19 as a black person in America. So you got to stay with us.